Hello listeners, it's producer Ben here. Now, we're on our way back from Portugal, where we've just wrapped up our series of pods about the Nations League. You can only hear them on Spotify, which is also the case for the Women's World Cup editions of The Offside Rule. Both shows are totally free. You don't need a premium account. You just need the Spotify app on your phone or your computer. Anyway, what you're about to listen to is a really interesting conversation between James Horncastle and the Oscar-winning filmmaker Asif Kapadia, who came back to the pod to tell us about his new documentary Diego Maradona, which is out in cinemas in the UK on June the 14th. Take it away, James.
Asif, thank you for coming back to see us. 18 months, I think. You were in post-production at that time. I think there was a lot of kind of toing and froing in terms of what you could get signed off. How did you bring it all together then? How did you convince everyone? Because some of the access you get, some of the voices you hear, it's kind of incredible that you got them all to kind of speak on the record and say what they did.
Thank you for having me back. I honestly started this film and I'd heard all these rumours. I'm like, I'm really not interested in gossip. This is not a tabloidy version. So I don't care who someone slept with and what they got up to. So I honestly went into film thinking, we're never going to deal with this stuff. That's not what it's about. It's about him. It's about his character. It's about, you know, football. But actually, as we got into it, if you get into the Naples story, if you get into what happened to him in Naples, for me, what became apparent during the research stage was the turning point. Professionally was, you know, winning the World Cup, winning the Scudetto, becomes a god, king of the world. But on a personal level, it's having this kid. He wants a kid. He wants a son. It's a very Latin thing. He wants a boy. He wants a boy called Diego. And he has a boy called Diego. But then he denies it's his. And it all happens at the same time. So at the point when he's at like the high point of his career, for me, becomes like a turning point where he starts to lie and denies it. And you can see he's lying in his interviews, and something changes in him. For me, having looked at thousands of hours of material all the way from when he was a kid right the way up to like last week, you look at it and you go, something's gone in his eyes. Something's, the light's gone from that point onwards in Naples. And they're still winning. They still do well, but he doesn't seem to be happy anymore.
I mean, one of the great scenes that I kind of left the cinema thinking, wow, I've never seen him look like that before. Was it a Christmas party in Naples where he is, everyone else is celebrating around him and he's just got this, he's just staring into nothingness. And he looks like he's going to break into tears at some point. How do you get hold of that? I mean, that's like that felt like a home video.
It was. That came from another character, one of the kind of Neapolitan characters that we might talk about. But for me, that's like a Long Good Friday shot. That's like the final shot on a Long Good Friday where everything's going on. It's just a shot. No one's talking of his face, but you can see him kind of almost thinking through everything he's done, everything that's about to happen, where he's gone. It's like, how did it all go wrong type moment. It's a really powerful scene. And it's actually probably, if you pick one shot, it's probably my favourite shot in the whole film, because what you realise is when you spend time in Diego Maradona land, things that you don't see a lot of is moments when he's vulnerable.
Yeah.
When he's feeling a little bit lost and weak, when actually a lot of the time I think he is, but he covers it up. And that's a moment quite late on where you see him going, oh boy, it's all going to drop, it's all going to kick off, isn't it? And it does.
Well, I mean, you hinted when we last met that this was going to be the thread, I suppose, of the story, this desire of his to have a son. And when the end credits roll, it's quite interesting. In the screening that we were at, people got up and kind of left. And then after, what, maybe 30 seconds or so, you see this scene where
you've got to stay until the end
because you see Diego Maradona Jr.
Bloody journalist. They walk out, do they? But he's already writing a report before the end of the match.
But one of the things I found stunning about that particular scene, Asif, is that you see Diego Maradona Jr. dressed all in one sportswear apparel sponsor, let's say, and you see Senior dressed in another, almost like it felt like, yeah, this deeply personal moment, a real significant moment in both their relationships, someone essentially was trying to capitalize from. And I just found that really kind of odd and jarring about how all these competing interests on a personal life. It was just bizarre. But I mean, if we go back to the start of the film, I found the energy with which it starts. I thought the score is brilliant because it really, you get this kind of excitement buzz for someone moving somewhere, but it feels also like a car chase, and you feel like you're in the car, and you feel like, where am I going here? Again, like, that home video of, you know, it is literally someone's camera on a dashboard of a car taking you somewhere where, if you're uninitiated, you don't know Naples, you don't know where you are, you're kind of disoriented. And then you go, then it takes you to the stadium. But you kind of, again, get that really, that feel of there are crowds of people outside anticipating that something's happening. Where did that come from?
This is the heart of the kind of story of this type of film, where we started making a film, and very early on, there was this story that Jorge Sister Spiller, his first agent, first super manager, agent, had the idea, because Diego Maradona is going to be a star. He should be on the movies. He should be big in America. So in like 1981, 82, before he goes to Barcelona, he hires two Argentinian cameramen to shoot a film on Diego Maradona. So they have these old bulky U-matic cameras, and he starts filming him in Argentina. They follow him through Barcelona. They then continue through Naples until Coppola comes along and says, I want to get rid of some of this entourage, and he fires them. But these tapes were out there. The film was never completed. It was like I've seen a cut of it, and it was like an early YouTube video before YouTube was invented.
Yeah.
You know, with kind of Kenny Everett-style graphics and kind of music and like slightly out of this world feeling about it, because he was a player from out of this world. Didn't really work. But these tapes were left somewhere outside of Naples, and my producers heard about them and went there, had a look at them, and then said, look, this could be amazing. This footage is incredible. It's basically private footage of Diego Maradona in his peak period in Naples. But to get the footage, you've got to do a deal with Diego. So then they spoke to his lawyer, Matthias Mahler, and did a deal with Diego. When Diego was over here, I think for the Davis Cup, 2015, I think it was, 2015, 16. And he loves his tennis, so he was here watching the tennis, and they did a deal. And once they did a deal for his image rights, we could then access all this material. Mm. So half of the tapes were in Naples, outside of Naples, but there was
outside
another
Naples
batch.
In where? In some kind of...
So one of the cameramen kept them.
Okay.
He may well have been owed a bit of money still.
Yeah.
He may have... The only contact he still had with Diego were the tapes.
Mm.
But in a format that nobody's got an interest. And he can't do anything with them, because he can't do anything unless Diego agrees.
Yeah.
And I'm sure many people have tried in the last 30 years to access that footage, but they've never been able to do a deal with the cameraman and Diego. And my producers were able to do that deal. So we had Diego's permission, and we could therefore do something with the footage. But it wasn't all there. Then there's a rumour that there's even more out there. And it takes me, a year, maybe a year and a half, to go to Argentina, go to Buenos Aires, make a connection with Claudia, Villafane, his ex-wife now, who, while we were making the film, Claudia and Diego were at war.
Yeah, and I suppose if you want to get an idea of how much Diego likes tennis, there's a great scene of them playing tennis together in that
film. It's very sweet, that. It's really funny. He's a good player.
Yeah.
And you can also see how honest they both are by the way they play their tennis. But the rest of the footage we found in a trunk in Buenos Aires in his old flat, which had not been touched for 30 years, and the tapes were disintegrating.
Mm.
So when I met with Claudia, you know, I was saying to her, look, even if you don't let me have the footage, this is all going to be lost. Let me just transfer it, digitize it. I'll give you the tapes back. And if we can do a deal, great. So eventually we were able to do a deal. But I was like, literally, the tapes were falling apart because they'd been, you know, it's been humid and all this sort of stuff. So like the shot where he is arriving at the stadium near the beginning, and he walks up the stairs at Napoli Stadium in São Paulo. One shot from behind him we found in Naples, and the reverse shot when he walks up we found in Buenos Aires.
Wow.
And that's kind of how these films work. There's like a jigsaw puzzle, a little mosaic of bits and pieces you find dotted all over the world, and you kind of look at it going, in itself it's nothing, but when you join them together they become a beautiful picture, hopefully.
Yeah, because I felt I'd seen quite a lot, basically because when I was in Italy there was a 10-part DVD box set with, is it Gianni Mina or someone, who you do see a little bit in the film interviewing.
Yeah, he has one moment, yeah.
But there was so much that, again, that I'd never seen, so many personal moments, which, again, in terms of like dealing with his addiction, there was one incredibly powerful scene where it's kind of, there's this sort of red light, which is quite appropriate, I suppose, of him just looking into the mirror out of it, and you don't know whether he's going to kind of fall over, keel over, or whatever. Was that part of all of that set of tapes? Was that part of a documentary then that they were making? I mean, because again, I even if I were making a documentary on Diego Maradona, I wouldn't really feel that was an appropriate thing to be, for me to be filming.
So this is all I'm supposed to do with context, where he was being filmed, and you know, when you take someone's life and you put it all together and you condense it and conflate it, you will see things now because we are telling you this is what's going on. Yeah. But if at the time when you're filming it, this is all normal, you know, you start filming someone, that's what they are like. Sure. That's what they look like at the time. You know, part of the skill of my editor and our team of is sometimes to take an image that's literally, this is what we're showing to you. Sometimes there's a meaning that you infer from what I'm showing to you, but that's him at the time. So in the time period will be correct. That was him at that moment in time. But where he is literally, you know, I can't remember now, you know, but I know that that shot emotionally told me what you needed to know. That makes sense. So that's kind of how they're constructed. Yeah, they were filming him all the time. And at the time, that's what Diego Maradona looked like.
Yeah.
It's only when you explain what's going on and when he himself is talking over that footage about what he's going through and how he's hiding from his kids because of his issues, then you realise, I can't believe someone filmed that. But that was the nature of this footage. It's also the meaning that we give it, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, there were two follow-up things that I wanted from that. Was like, A, if you put that in, was there anything that you left out?
It's only now when the film is done and it's out and people are watching it that I look back and I go, oh God, why did we take that scene out? And why did we take that scene out? Because I had to put together some like DVD extras and I saw a few scenes and I was like, why is that not in a movie? That's an amazing scene. But, you know, the only thing I can say is that, you know, that opening, that crazy opening, the drive to Naples, you know, like French Connection or Italian Job or something. In an earlier cut, when I met you last time I was here, that was 45 minutes long.
Wow.
Right? But the problem is, by the time you get to Naples, you're like, oh God, really? The film's only just beginning. So we have to make tough decisions. We went into quite a lot of detail in Barcelona. We went into quite a lot of detail after he left Naples and Cuba and everything else that came. But our job is to kind of make a two-hour film that is watchable by hardcore fans and people who want to know everything and people who have no interest in football or kind of heard of Diego Maradona but not a fan. And I want to get that audience in as well. So, yeah, the footage of him in Barcelona is amazing because the kind of intimacy that you get there. And he's really young and innocent.
Yeah.
And he's having a really bad time there. I don't know if people know how he was treated not very well by the club. He had an awful time. The leg break, you know, you see him having his leg broken by Goycochea. He gets carried off. And then the camera just keeps filming. So you see him being literally put on the floor in a car park and his wife's kind of wafting a piece of paper over him. He's the most expensive player in the world and he's been put on the ground.
In a car
park. And then
this
vehicle that looks like the Ghostbusters vehicle turns up and they throw him in the back and they go off to the hospital and then they film the entire operation. You know, they filmed everything.
Well, this is the thing. You see the knife.
And you hear him talking about it. I mean, that's the other thing. You hear him talking about his leg snapping and it sounded like a piece of wood breaking. And everyone told him his career's over. So, you know, he could have been over.
Yeah.
6 weeks later, he's back. And he's even better and stronger, you know. So that guy who came back from all those ligaments broken and everything, and his doctor is a fascinating character. So there's all of these subplots, which will be one of the kind of extras that hopefully we'll be able to put out there. It's really hearing this kid talking about it could have all been over before it started, but I'm not going to take that. And that's Diego Maradona. You knock him down, you break his ankle, he comes back stronger. You can't knock the guy down.
Well, this is one of the things why I'd recommend anyone who's listening to go and see this in the cinema, because the sound effects that you have in this film are amazing. In fact, I would like listen to a sleep playlist of some of these things, because you hear the clang of the post when a free kick hits the woodwork. You hear him take a penalty. You hear the thud of the ball. You hear the physical contact that and the kind of aggression that he had to put up with on the pitch. And you see it close up in real time. And you see these kind of forearm smashes. You see that leg break.
Football in those days, you know, how tough it was. That's the thing. That's why it's a big deal to score 15 goals in a season when you get treated like that. I mean, you're right. We have a brilliant team. So the technical aspects of the sound design and the score and the music and the editing, all of that comes together to make the movie. So when we get it, you know, so I want you to feel like you're in there.
Yeah.
So sometimes there's some audio on the tape, but a lot of the time you just hear it in the crowd. So they have to recreate all of that, but it has to feel believable. It has to be, you know, be put together by people who kind of pay attention to football. So everyone on the team, pretty much most of them are football fans. So they understand what it sounds like to be at a stadium and to feel in the cinema like you're in the middle of the San Paolo at its peak. So I'm glad you noticed that, because there's a hell of a lot of work.
I thought from the start, it did feel, I don't know whether this is intentional or not, it felt like part video game, part kind of one of those classic kind of Japanese anime kind of Holly and Benji, Captain Tsubasa kind of captain kind of things, because you did get a real sense of, well,
it's visceral, isn't it? It's like it hurts.
Yeah,
you get tackled, you get kicked, it hurts.
Yeah,
you
and
know.
I think some of the angles as well in which you you see his goals.
So it's important. The reason we were able to get that footage, because that close up stuff of Diego on the pitch where the camera's behind the goal or next to him on the side of the pitch, those are his personal cameramen.
Wow.
He would just walk onto the pitch and shoot.
Mm.
So that's, you know, at the time, imagine 84, 85, what was Italian football? It was a big high angle shot from the top of the stand.
Yeah.
They may have had a few low cameras, but the reason we can get that close to him and just single him out at each point is because he's a personal cameraman. We're allowed to go anywhere they want and shoot it.
And that was part of the Seister Billet's documentary.
That's all footage that was shot. So that's why even hardcore fans of Italian football have never seen these angles, because they were all in a bunch of tapes somewhere in a cupboard, somewhere in Naples, somewhere in Argentina.
Well, also, I mean, it lends to like a dramatic effect so well. I mean, the one that really stuck with me was the semi-final in Italia 90, where it comes to the penalty shootout and you see Roberto Donadoni miss his penalty. And in the same shot, you see Diego Maradona pass him and go to the spot himself, score, run away, celebrate, all in kind of incredible one shot.
So that's a good example of the other end of the spectrum, because of, you know, we've got kind of experienced producers and we have to have a bit of budget to make this film. So that we managed to get rushes from FIFA.
Mm.
So that's FIFA footage on film shot, which never would have gone out, because obviously you would never just show one long shot of one person.
Well, part of me as Steve thinks, God, why do we have all these damn cutaways all the time? Because that was so much more powerful of that
direction moment. That's the reason, you know. You know, because we don't even show the ball. You just show him and you know what's going on.
Mm.
But you're going to have the nerve to do it. And for me, that's the last bit of football in the movie.
Yeah.
You know, that's the point when he scores and he wins, but he loses.
Mm.
That's when everything changes and turns. So, it was just, that's the choice. You have to look at everything and make a choice of saying, story-wise and character-wise, what's the best shot to tell the story?
Mm. And I mean, there was some great, again, it kind of audio and shot kind of mixing together in terms of where the national anthem is being played in Naples and the Argentine, it gets
that's in Rome.
Oh, that's in Rome, isn't
that's
it?
The final. Yeah.
Where it gets booed and you see and you hear Maradona.
I don't think we had the translation at the time on TV when we were all watching.
Brilliant. That was one of the best moments of the movie.
It's Maradona.
Yeah.
Who else would do that?
and again, just, I don't know, it was you got a real kind of intimacy again with it was even the stuff you saw on the stands. Like, I mean, you talk about the context of the 86 World Cup and the Falklands, and you have that shot on the England fans and what they're saying.
So, you know, making us proud. Making us proud around the world. I love that shot because it's like, that is kind of, you know, sadly those are the ones that were travelling.
Mm.
And the perspective of this film, you know, when I made Senna, I was like, this is a film told from a point of view from Brazil.
Yeah.
You know, I want you to come out feeling Brazilian. With this one, it's like, I want you to feel a bit more Argentinian and Neapolitan.
Mm.
And actually, that is the perspective of the England fans that people would have been seeing.
Yeah.
We may not have seen it, or they would have cut away. But I love that crapness of them.
You also have some great people involved who help you tell the story. So there's John Foote, who wrote Calcio. And you've got Daniel Accucci, the Argentine journalist. And just their experiences, well, particularly Daniel's.
Yeah.
You tell the story about Diego and his links with the Camorra very well. And Daniel helps really a lot with that, in terms of he's there to interview him one time. And all of a sudden, the doorbell rings.
At midnight.
And Diego says, do you want to go and see the real Naples? And he goes, if anyone's seen Gomorra, particularly the last few series, where you do have a clan from Forcella, which is the area where the Giuliano clan is from, you see these, again, incredible photos of, you know, something past midnight, where all of a sudden a piazza where nothing is going on, where it looks completely quiet, all of a sudden it lights up, fireworks, people come out because Diego is there.
And this is the day before the final game of the season.
Mm.
And they're out in Forcella in the middle of the night. And when you see him come out the next day, you can see he's been out all night, but, you know, he has to do kind of what he's told. I mean, Arcucci was there. That's the thing. Daniel Arcucci, he spent years following Diego around, and he knows Diego Maradona very well. He spent every Christmas with him since, I think, 85, 86.
Wow.
And he served his time. And he was a great guy. He's a great guy. And I went and interviewed him quite a few times in Buenos Aires and spent time with him. And then I showed him the film, you know, at the ending, just to say, like, what do you think? How are we doing? And he got really emotional. He cried like anything because it's like someone kind of gets Diego Maradona, you know, all the sides of him, the kind of good and the bad, because he's lived with him for so long and been his biographer and the guy that Diego opens up to. But also some of the tougher things that, in a way, we have to deal with in the film. Maybe Daniel keeps the relationship going by not necessarily always going directly to those places. You know, he finds a way to deal with it slightly more obliquely. But he got really emotional when he saw the film.
Yeah. So those harder places, what are they then?
I guess there's, you know, in this period that we're dealing with, it's kind of relationship with women. It's the kind of addictions, and it's the links to the underworld and the Camorra. But the women lead to his children, illegitimate children, and kind of the changes that happen. So I suppose those are the things that for a long time he denied or ignored, or it never happened, or I didn't know who those people were in the photo. That was a set answer that he often gave. Everyone wants a picture of me. I don't know who those guys are. But actually, when we spoke to him, he said, well, he tells the story of how he goes to meet them, which is very different to the one that he's always given previously.
Yeah, and you overlay that on top of the, what be it, the photographs of him with the Giulianos, or just some of the kind of the action. I mean, will you be showing this film in Naples?
I really love Naples. I want to show it there, and I would like to go back there. And Neapolitans who've seen it so far, you know, they really like it. They love it. They start crying. They get very emotional about this period of time. But, you know, I just hope it goes down all right, because it's another time. It's the 80s, and it's different now. It's different people now out there on the streets. But, you know, that's why you tell me. What do you think?
Well, I think the film actually deals with Naples. I mean, this is something I was maybe not expecting, because when we spoke last time, we did talk a lot about Napoli because the podcast is about Italian football. I didn't expect it to feature so much. And in fact, I think you use Naples to tell and to show all the sides of Maradona's character. It brought all of those sides out. So it was very useful in that sense. But I think it shows Naples in all its lights as well. Because you see in that first press conference introducing Diego Maradona to Italian football, I think it's the first question, is about Naples and organised crime and the Camorra. And you see the reaction that gets from the president, Corrado Fellaino, where he just loses it. And everyone stands up and applauds him for basically taking aim at this journalist for asking a tough and perhaps inappropriate question.
Typical French journalist who gets kicked out. He gets thrown out as well. Yeah, and then you look at Diego's face and he's like, I don't know what the hell's going on. You know, he really is like a lost kid at that point. He does not know where he's going. You know, he said, you know, they were the people that were willing to pay. He went there.
I think you did a really good job of telling that story, which I think people had a superficial knowledge of. But I think it's something that perhaps people better understand from watching Gomorrah or from reading anything that Roberto Saviano's done. But also, you really put names to faces in this film. You really kind of contextualize it. And you also kind of tell a story which, again, in terms of like how they used him, you know, be it for promoting new businesses, and not just kind of, you know, enabling an addiction, but also
it's the whole system. That's the whole thing, isn't it? It's how it all works. You have someone like that, people want to come there. I mean, I love Naples. It's just the most intense place, though, and that's now. I can't imagine what it would have been like in the 80s with Diego Maradona being around, you know, but it's just full on constantly all the time, and the people are just full of love and full of like touchy feeliness, and they want to get close to you, and it was great, but it was also too much for him, you know. It's just too much love, too much intensity. And you can now, when I watch it and when I spent time there, I understand when Diego says, I couldn't come out, I couldn't do anything, I had to go out in the middle of the night because it's not possible to go out, and you believe it. And we have this footage in the film which is of him, you know, popping down to the local bowling alley because it's open and it just goes nuts, you know, because he's there and the whole street gets blocked up, and that would happen to him every single day of his life everywhere he went. And it's hard to keep your sanity if you're surrounded by that. And I think that's really what the story's about. It's it's not in any way criticism, but you can just see it's like you can almost have too much of a good thing.
Yeah.
He needed that love and he needed that attention. And you've got a city where there's one club, everyone supported Naples from one end of the spectrum where the judges and the police commissioners and the street guys and the low kind of gangsters and everyone was a Napoli fan. Mm. And everyone wanted a picture with Diego. And he went along with it because he wants to be the big man in town.
Well, you talk about pictures. I mean, one of the things that I'll never look at kind of the same way, pictures of that time, is whenever Diego is wearing a Rolex. And where he got those from, because I mean, of course, he could afford them, but I mean, that was amazing kind of piece of storytelling.
Rolexes, Ferraris, all of that, you know, all of this stuff that, you know, you see, and it's there in the story, but yeah, you learn about how he came about all this stuff,
and also kind of the towards the end of his time in Naples, you see how he gets abandoned by the Camorra because they're getting too much heat, too much publicity, they're in the limelight too much for their liking, also then by the club. When it's clear he's out of control and it might do them well to get rid of him. But you then see these him being implicated in an investigation. And what, again, you have, which I'd never heard before, are these wiretaps of people talking about Diego coming, Diego ordering, let's say, something, be it women, be it drugs. And you hear them all talking about it, how it all went down, when these calls were being made, you know, 3-4 in the morning. How did you get sort of access to that? Because that was incredible listening to.
You do a lot of research. Yeah, I mean, once you're out in Naples and you start talking, because a lot of this came out of, you know, various court cases against him. And then if there's a court case and they mention things, then we have a brilliant team who say, well, it's a movie. I can only do a movie if I can show something or you hear it.
Yeah.
So let's dig around. And you know, in a mad way, we kind of got Italian bureaucracy to go, what? Are you crazy? No one knows where this stuff is. And I was like, well, why don't we look for it? Mm. And you know what? They were like, God, no one's ever asked before.
Yeah.
So they started to look and they started to find things. And we're like, this is amazing. They were impressed by themselves that they actually had a system where you could find things. If you understand where to go and who to talk to and if, you know, and if you get everyone in the right frame of mind, people were willing to do it. But, you know, it's Italy. It's the same with Buenos Aires. You don't do anything over the phone. You don't do anything by fax or by email. You have to go there.
Yeah.
You have to sit down. You have a coffee. You chat to people. You explain what you're doing, why you're doing it, who's on board. And they go, okay, we'll try. And if you ask and if you have time, these films take a long time because I do want to find that material that no one's ever had before. And I want to show you footage that no one's ever seen before. And I want to get Diego. And just pinning down Diego when he's living in Dubai is not easy. Getting people in Buenos Aires, you know, all of that just takes time. Mm. So I have a very small team, but a brilliant team who are so dedicated. And we get a bit obsessed with getting the real footage and not hearing the opinion of someone who kind of said, I heard. It's like, no, let's find the tapes.
Mm. So how long did the film take to make then?
I think it started officially, it's been about 3 years. It was sort of like the spring of 2016 when the deal was done with Diego's people. And then I first went to Dubai, I reckon September 2016, and met with Diego. I think it was around then. And the first meeting was five, you know, the classic first meeting everyone you've ever heard of that's ever made a film about Diego Maradona is you waiting for Diego.
Mm.
So I went to Dubai and my producers wanted to come and I had a camera person and I had a sound person and a translator and you go there and he lives on a giant palm tree, second fond on the left. And the first day, they tell you this is the date he's around. So you go there. And then the first day, oh, he's not feeling great today. Come back tomorrow. Okay, what about tomorrow? No, today's not great. What about tomorrow? Okay, 3, 4, 5 days going, you're like, all right, I'm going home now. Mm. And then in the end, it was like, can I just say hello? And I'm like, yeah, just you on your own, fine. But then, of course, everyone wants to meet Diego Maradona. So we go there. And it was 5 days of waiting, and it was a 5-minute conversation. Hello, you're going to make a great film. Yes, I am. Okay, take a picture. Bye. And that was it. So then I thought,
and that
okay.
was the endorsement. That was it done.
By then, the deal had already been done. But, you know, I was supposed to get 3 interviews each of, say, 3 hours in length over the course of the film. And I thought, right, that's 5 days and a lot of money spent for 5 minutes to say hello.
Yeah.
Maybe this is going to be a little bit more like making Senna and Amy, where I don't have the lead character and I just have to make the film.
Yeah.
And I thought, let's just do that. Let's make the film, do our research, figure out what the story is, and then I'll talk to him about the specifics. And that's how it worked. So the next time I went was probably almost a year later.
Mm.
And he was on better form, but kind of tired, shall we say, and not a lot of what he was saying. I thought, I don't know if I can use this, but it was just another stepping stone to saying, can I come back tomorrow? Yeah. come back the next day. I now know how the process works. And, you know, at the time we met in his living room, he's watching Boca on TV, mute the television when he pops out of the room so I can record the sound myself, just have a translator in the room. And then I kind of broached the subject of, you know, ex-wife, don't talk about her. Let's not go there. That was one of the easy questions. Okay, what about Jorge? No, I don't want to hear about him. You stole my money. Okay, fine. This is making it. Let's just talk about you and your childhood. And then he kind of opened up and his family and his parents. And that was, okay, these are the easy questions. I'll save the tough ones up to the next trip. Mm. And then we go through that. And then we talk about the England match and we talk about the World Cups and all of this. And then we start getting there. And then I realise, okay, we've got to deal with the heavy ones. And there was a particular moment I said, okay, this whole day now is just going to be about dealing. So whenever he went off on a tangent, if I asked a question about one thing and he told me a long story about Sepp Blatter, I'd have to interrupt him.
I'm really sorry that didn't make the film.
Some great stories, but they weren't really relevant to the point that I was trying to ask him about. So I, by now, had this very convoluted system where we're in his living room in Dubai. I'm there. I've brought Luca, who's my sound recordist from Naples, who was there in the stadium. We used to watch Diego, so they got along really well, and that put Diego in a good mood. So he was my sound recordist. Lena's my translator. I ask a question in English. She translates to Spanish. He answers in Spanish. I've got my computer with FaceTime on, which two of my team are listening to it in London in case there's some factual inaccuracies that come up, and they can type and I can read it. I've got a WhatsApp call going to Buenos Aires where Laura is listening because she understands Diego's very particular Argentinian Spanish, which is not the same as anyone else's Argentinian Spanish. It's Diego language. So she's listening. She's translating into my ear via another phone so I can get live translation. Because I know I've only got like a 90-minute window every time I meet him and his energy drops off or he gets bored and he wants me out. I've got to deal with these tough questions. So if he does go off on a tangent, I can interrupt him. And I ask him the question that I want. And eventually he got a bit peed off and he just looked at me and said, you know, you've got a nerve. You've got a nerve asking me these questions to my face.
Well, there you go.
But for that, I respect you.
Boom.
Because most people wouldn't have the nerve to say this to my face. And I was like, okay, good. Can we just go back to the question? Because so that was it. It was the moment when he realized we're going to have to talk about this stuff, Diego. And we did.
And you talked about how him and Claudia were at war at the time. And you think of all the other different interested parties in this story, the Sinagras, Villafane, his kids.
Like to have them, both women in one project, it's unheard of. To have Claudia and Sinagra. You know, no one's ever done this. They've all been on tabloid shows.
Yeah.
But the Sinagra story and Diego Jr. and I talked to his kids, his daughters, all of them. Mm. They don't all make the film, but they all gave me the kind of backstory to explain it. And I think it's a really painful story, that idea of what happened and why he did it. I don't understand why he did that. And he put himself through a lot of pain, I think. Mm. You know, I don't think it's... His addictions come off the back of all of this, I think, all of these lies that he started to tell.
Well, again, and this is, I think, one of the great pieces of storytelling in the film is you see his parents. His dad clearly wanted a boy as well, and he was very late in coming along. And again, that kind of happening to him as well. I was also struck how he physically resembled his father in such a way, in that they, you know, in terms of Diego's face as what we know it now, I mean, that was his father when you see him in the film, really, at the similar age. And, you know,
you know what his dad's job was? His dad used to crush bones for a living. I mean, that's where he came from. He used to, you know, make glue and stuff. And it was like the toughest, smelliest job ever.
Mm.
Very physical. And he'd come home and, as he says, he'd come on and he'd just fall asleep.
Yeah.
But he'd take him to training every day.
I mean, the other job you see him doing in the film is at the barbecue, making what, asado for the Argentine
really
football team.
Really good kind of football food, yeah. Really serious amounts of steak and meat, but that's Argentina. There you go. Yeah, that's, again, his personal cameramen are in there with the Argentinian squad during the 86 World Cup.
Yeah, I mean, that was the other thing that I found amazing about the film was I'd kind of seen all the kind of crowd that San Paolo, when they win the league title, what it's like in the streets in Naples. I had never seen the reception that team got, the Argentina team, when they come back as world champions. And you see Diego in the presidential palace, essentially being like a capo ultra waving his leading chant, and you see the crowd before him, all with their Argentina flags. It is an amazing crowd scene.
Yeah, it's an amazing moment. Actually, there's a particular moment, an incredible little moment, just before that when they get off the plane.
Mm.
And he's carrying the World Cup. And I think you can see life's not going to be the same.
Yeah.
When they're all jostling him and he's
It looks
he's
so afraid. Claustrophobic. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's like, this is going to be scary. And that's sort of what happens. You know, he wins the World Cup and they're away in Mexico. No one thought they were going to do very well. All the press of pancakes, which I love. Because it's like they're two-faced. I remember saying, I've got to ask you, Diego, I've got to ask you these questions because I don't want you ever calling me a pancake. Right? But yeah, that moment when he comes back to Argentina, you just realise life's never going to be the same. You know, he becomes this myth, the legend.
So on the subject of him never calling you a pancake, has he seen the film? What does he think of the film?
So a bit like trying to meet Diego for the first time, trying to show Diego the film is a bit like that. About a year ago, before the World Cup, I contacted these people and said, look, I've got a film. I want to show it to you. I want to show it to you first. Also, because I was still owed one interview. So I'm going to show you the film. Then if you have an issue with anything, then we can do the interview straight after. Because also, you might just see Naples and remember things. So they go, okay, fine. So okay, so can I come back to Dubai and do it in your house? I'll show it to you on your TV. And he said, no, I'm not going to be in Dubai. His people. He's going to be in Belarus.
Okay.
Belarus. Okay, where's Belarus? Look on a map. It's closer. It's closer than Dubai. So should we come to Belarus? No time. He's off to Colombia. Colombia, right. Don't think I can get to Colombia. What are you going to do after Colombia? Well, he's going to go to the World Cup, obviously. He's going to be in the World Cup. Come to the World Cup. Show him. I'm like, I don't think that's going to be the best time to show you the film. And as we saw, it probably wasn't the best time to go to Moscow to show him the film. I said, after the World Cup, I want to show it to you somewhere nice and peaceful and quiet. He said, well, I'll be in Argentina. Great. I'm going to fly to Argentina. We booked the tickets. I've got to do a few more interviews in Argentina. I've got to tie up a few things. 2 days before I fly to Argentina, he takes a job in Mexico. I still haven't seen it. But then I thought, okay, what I'll do is I'll show you the film in Cannes. If we can get into Cannes, maybe you'll come to Cannes. It'll be a big event. There'll be a lot of love for you. We'll show it to you there. It'll be great. And then he wasn't able to come to Cannes.
Mm.
So he hasn't seen it yet. During the Cannes screening, at the beginning, there was all this applause and it was great. I was like, oh, what a shame he's not here on red carpet. During the film, I thought, thank God he's not here in Cannes. If he was sitting next to me, maybe it's not the best time to show you someone the film for the first time in this situation. Then at the end of the film, again, I thought, oh, what a shame he's not here. But maybe I wouldn't have got to the end of the film. So I feel like I've got to show it to him privately at some point.
And because, I mean, I'm not Diego Maradona, so I can't claim to know what his reaction would be, but it was just a very honest telling of his story. And you get to see the highs and how high they are. Probably not the best word to use, given we see part of his addiction as well. But again, I think...
Maybe it's all linked, you know, you need that kind of feeling, that buzz, who knows, but yeah. You see the highs and you see the reality of the lows and you see, you know, it's tough at times.
Yeah, I mean, you see the physical transformation of the guy as well.
Kid that arrives and the man that leaves are so different. Mm. You know, what's happened to his face and his eyes and, you know, literally his body, how it's changed over that period of time. I would, you know, feel like, also there's so many images there that he will never have seen of himself at his peak and his kids and his family and people around him and... So I was hoping, you know, there'd be like a moment of kind of clarity, hopefully, where he could look at it. And I think he's trying to deal with things. You know, a few weeks ago, he kind of recognised 3 more kids in Cuba that he had. You know, I'm hoping that he's trying to, you know, deal with stuff that he's done. And I think that's a good thing to be doing that. But I felt myself, when I got to Cannes, I just thought, it's such a mad, intense place. It's the small taste that people like me have of having paparazzi and press shouting at you, having your picture taken, a lot of applause. It's really full on. And you just think that isn't for everyone.
Mm.
And, you know, I felt actually probably it's a good thing that he didn't come, because if he's not in a great place, that's not the place to be, you know. So I'd much rather show it to him privately and we sit down and we have a grown-up chat about it.
Well, we hope you enjoyed that, listeners. Diego Maradona is out in cinemas across the UK on June the 14th, and it really is sensationally good. If you want to hear more from Asif Kapadia, go back into the archives of our Galazzo podcast, where he talks in depth about Maradona's time in Naples. That's from February 2018, and you'll find Galazzo on Apple, Spotify, Audioboom, and everywhere else you get your podcasts.